This is New England Public Radio's Jazz Beat. I'm Tom Reaney with a podcast edition of my jazz blog, which you can find at nepr.net. This edition of Jazz Beat is a memorial tribute to Fats Domino. There's no doubt in my mind that the first music I heard from New Orleans was by Fats Domino, and that he was in my head for well over a decade before the city's music became a passion of mine. That didn't take place until I saw Professor Longhair in Central Park in 1973, but I would have heard Fats as early as the late 50s, and there the seed was planted. His hit tunes, Blueberry Hill, Ain't That a Shame, and Walkin' to New Orleans, were part of the oral wallpaper of my youth, and the intriguingly named Antoine Dominique Domino was no stranger to television either.
Here is Fats Domino singing Blueberry Hill. So let's hear it. Hearing Professor Longhair's bared-knuckle synthesis of blues, rumba, mamba, habanero, and boogie-woogie ignited what felt like a new musical awakening in me. But the truth was that through Fats, I'd been enjoying variations on this musical gumbo since my grammar school days. Much like Louis Armstrong a generation earlier, Domino was the most visible exponent of a musical culture that ran deep and flowed everywhere. And while I responded more directly to the raw blues feeling in Fess and Earl King and Smiley Lewis than to Fats's more polished and light-hearted effusions, his hits were a constant delight, and his hard-driving shuffles, Please Don't Leave Me, Blue Monday, and The Fat Man, became staples of R&B radio shows I hosted 40 years ago. Fats Domino died on October 24th at age 89.
the amazing run of hit records he enjoyed in the 50s and 60s to find a new era in music, and he helped bring into the mainstream the relatively obscure lineage of piano-driven blues and second-line parade rhythms of his hometown. In this respect, Domino deserves credit not only as a musical populist, but as a major player in the preservation of a unique musical culture that fuels New Orleans' tourist industry and the ritualistic appeal of its music festivals. And while his death made headlines globally, it was major news back home, where television reports ran as long as 13 minutes and thousands joined a second-line parade in his memory. Fats Domino's hit parade began to subside over 50 years ago, but through decades of touring behind full-throttle shows and a huge catalog of recordings, he continually broke through to new generations of listeners. On the home front, his accessibility, humble demeanor, and longtime residency in the marginal Ninth Ward neighborhood where he was raised only added to his appeal among musicians. One of the most prominent of his New Orleans-born disciples is John Batiste, the 29-year-old pianist who's best known as the music director for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. Batiste eulogized Fats in the New York Times on October 28th and concluded his op-ed memorial by saying the pianist died knowing full well that he holds a rare title, founder of both the jazz and the early rock and roll establishments. Batiste devotes most of the column to his personal odyssey as a young New Orleanian gradually coming to appreciate that African Americans were pioneers of rock and roll. Domino stands as Exhibit A for what Batiste calls the beginning, and no less a figure than Elvis Presley said as much on a few occasions, even going so far as to declare Fats the true king of rock and roll. But it's not clear why Batiste adds jazz founder to the credits, and it made me bristle not only over its historical inaccuracy, but at the thought of how some of Domino's own sidemen, as well as jazz players in general, and some of the patrons of the Antibes Jazz Festival would take issue with the specious claim. I've had a fervent appreciation for both jazz and blues for close to 50 years, and right from the start, I noticed how dismissive jazz people could be toward blues. Not the kind Charlie Parker and John Coltrane and Charles Mingus played, but the down-home blues of T-Bone Walker, Muddy Waters, and even B.B. King. The late Albert Murray, who was prominent in Ken Burns' PBS series Jazz and a mentor to Wynton Marsalis, once chided the King of the Blues for acting as though what he was playing and sweating over was challenging and new. In recent years, this attitude has mellowed, and virtually all musicians express some degree of respect for the blues masters. But I've heard more than one jazz player who's worked a sideman gig in a blues band mock the music's predictable rhythmic and harmonic patterns.
Hello, Charlie Fee. How do you do? Do you remember me, baby? Like I remember you. Used to live at me in Hollywood. I used to walk you home. I used to hold your hand. Used to use my umbrella every time it rained. Used to cry so much. It was a crying shame. He used to live over yonder by the railroad tracks. When it rained, you couldn't walk. I used to torture you on my back. Now you're trying to make believe It wasn't a deal like that. Hey, Lord, you're the thief. How do you do? Do you remember me, baby? Like I remember you. You used to live at me in Hollywood.
It's not hard to see where frustration would arise in musicians who've devoted their lives to the rigorous standards of modern jazz, only to find themselves playing basic horn charts and routine chord changes for a living. One of the most glaring examples of this dilemma occurred with Domino's sideman Nat Parilliat, a legendary tenor player who had bebop chops, a heroin habit, and rent to pay in a city that has rarely been hospitable to modern jazz. Parilliat's New Orleans colleagues included Harold Bartiste, Ed Blackwell, and Ellis Marsalis, and he fronted a post-bop big band in New Orleans that remained a proverbial rehearsal band. But he worked with R&B great Shirley and Lee, Professor Longhair, Alan Toussaint, and Joe Tex, and toured with Domino's Road Band before his premature death at 34 in 1971. In Blue Monday, Fats Domino and the Lost Dawn of Rock and Roll, Rick Coleman cites an article by music journalist John Broven, in which he quotes Harold Bautiste saying, "Parilliat was out there on the road with Fats Domino, which he didn't deserve, a musician of his caliber. It's like putting John Coltrane in John Lee Hooker's band. It's just not fair, and that's what killed him." For the record, Bautiste spent 15 years earning a dependable livelihood as music director for Sonny and Cher. Musicians weren't alone in drawing sharp distinctions between jazz and Fats Domino's driving blues and boogie-woogie. At the Antibes Jazz Fest in France in 1962, Fats shared the bill with the Clara Ward gospel singers Jimmy Smith and Dizzy Gillespie. In Blue Monday, Rick Coleman says, "A few purists heckled as Fats took the stage, and one complained that the pianist had a $4,800 watch and didn't know who Thelonious Monk was." Robert Houston, a reporter from Melody Maker, said that while Domino's set was very entertaining and the crowd loved every minute of it, it was not jazz festival material. Fats Domino was born in 1928, the same year that Louis Armstrong was recording his Hot Five classics West End Blues and A Monday Date, and Duke Ellington was attracting international attention at the Cotton Club in Harlem. As measured by the timeline enumerated in Jelly Roll Morton's boast about having invented jazz in 1903, Antoine Domino's baptism was still a quarter century away from the music's establishment. Earlier in his otherwise laudable tribute, John Batiste says that New Orleans was the birthplace of jazz, that Domino was influenced by it, and adds correctly that Fats bridged jazz and rock and roll. But his establishment gambit smacks of cultural overreach, and one wonders if anyone at the New York Times gave it a second thought. Batiste's main point, however, is quite valid, that while rock and roll is largely African-American in origin, he had to dig deep in order to make the discovery. Jimi Hendrix was his first touchstone, but it wasn't until he heard what he calls the percussive piano of Domino's Blueberry Hill and saw an audience respond to it that he made the connection. In that moment, he writes, "I had finally arrived at the beginning, Fats Domino."
I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill, on Blueberry Hill. When I found you, the moon stood still on Blueberry Hill. It lingered until my dream. deep. But all of the vows you made are never to be. So we're apart. You gotta be still.
When it comes to citing anyone as a creator of rock and roll, I'll happily go along with Domino, and if one must declare for something as subjective as the first rock and roll record, Fats' 1949 debut, The Fat Man, is as solid as any. In Blue Monday, Rick Coleman maintains conventional Elvis-time thinking in saying that it predated the crossover of rock and roll by 5 years, and he notes that it's been celebrated as a groundbreaker by John Lennon, Lou Reed, John Fogerty, and Robbie Robertson. I'm continually impressed by the numbers of musicians I've spoken with who invoke Fats' name as a bellwether of their own youthful discovery of African-American music, most recently in my conversation with Jelf Muldaur. And as long as I'm calling this role of rock stars, did you know that Paul McCartney composed Lady Madonna with Fats Domino in mind?
Lady Madonna, cheering at your feet. Wonder how you managed to make ends meet. Now who finds the money when you pay the rent? Did you think that money was heaven sent? Friday night arrived without no suitcase. Sunday morning creeping like a nun. Monday child had meant to tie his bootlace. See how they run. Lady Madonna, babies at your breast. Wonder how you managed to feed the rest.
To underscore just how ambiguous the notion of firsts are in music, consider that The Fat Man was adapted from Junker Blues, a 1941 recording by Champion Jack Dupree. And Junker was the basic prototype for other piano-driven classics, including Tipitina by Professor Longhair and Lottie Miss Claudie, the 1952 Lloyd Price number one R&B hit with an uncredited Fats Domino at the piano. Now add to this labyrinth one Willie Hall, a pianist whom Dupree credits with creating the tune's basic arrangement on a 1920s piano blues called Drive 'Em Down. Fats didn't fuss, of course. For him, it was simply R&B. And as true as that was, it may have been a slightly calculated distinction, too. As rock and roll became suspect for the frenzied and occasionally riotous behavior it induced in crowds, Fats had a brand to protect. The music was also controversial for pushing against the limits of segregation and sexual repression. Speaking of the impact of his 5-million-seller Blueberry Hill, New Orleans legend Irma Thomas, who was about 14 when it hit the airwaves, said, "I didn't know what the thrill was, but it sure sounded good." Alan Toussaint noted that Fats's music had a profound visceral power. Speaking of the simple introduction he plays on his 1951 single, Goin' Home, Toussaint told Rick Coleman, "When Fats plays that, it's magic. It's beyond just a general grace note in musical terms. It's a little bigger than life, just the way Fats is." The record's out-of-tune sax solo does little to diminish its power or the immediate influence it had on two more New Orleans recorded classics, Faye Adams' Shake a Hand and Guitar Slim's The Things That I Used to Do.
Going home tomorrow, can't stand your evil way. Going home tomorrow, can't stand your evil way. When you're around me, I'm full of misery all day. I can't go on this way. I can't go on this way. You don't want my loving, so I'm going away to stay.
Regardless of how the music was labeled, the 50s witnessed a panic reaction to the growing popularity of African-American music. White supremacist groups warned public establishments to keep records by black artists off their jukeboxes, and violence erupted at venues where the music was blurring rope-line demarcations between the races. Elvis Presley and Jerry Lee Lewis may have been daring, but black artists like Fats Domino, Chuck Berry, and Bo Diddley were the ones really laying it on the line. Fats was rarely outspoken on matters of civil rights, and he drew occasional criticism for playing segregated venues in his hometown. But his nationwide popularity brought blacks and whites together in ways that made segregation and Jim Crow customs impossible to defend or maintain, and helped spur enormous changes in American society. At the time, Fats told interviewers that the music then catching on with an ever-expanding youth market was the same as he'd been playing since the early 40s in New Orleans. That seems obvious in retrospect, but in that time and place, music popular with African Americans was still mostly beyond the view of the white mainstream. Fats Domino, of course, helped change all of that with a winning smile, an infectious style, and what bebop legend Howard Johnson called the restoration of a beat that was lost for a few years until Fats Domino brought it back. The result, as John Batiste put it, was a music of joyous communal power, and one that's unlikely to be equaled anytime soon.
Blue Monday, hate you Monday. Got to work like a slave all day. Here come Tuesday, oh, Tuesday. I'm so tired, got no time to play. Now here come Wednesday, I'm beating my socks.
For concert footage and additional memorabilia about Fats Domino, visit the jazz blog at NEPR.net, where you'll also find an array of podcasts produced by New England Public Radio. Thanks to Katie Wright for production assistance. For Jazz Beat, I'm Tom Meaney.
Saturday morning, oh, Saturday morning, all my tiredness have gone away. I got my money and my honey, and I'm out on the stage. Sunday morning, I hit it bad. Boy, it worth it for the time that I've had. But I've got to cause Monday's a mess. Saturday morning, all my tiredness have gone away. I got my money and my honey, and I'm out on the stem to play. But Sunday morning, I hit it bad. Boy, it waited for the time that I've had, but I've got to get my rest, cause Monday's a mess.